USV, and I apologize if I get this wrong. How do you pronounce it, please?
Pyalunik.
The court calls USV Pyalunik. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, Chief Judge Baker, members of the honorable court. My name is Greg Gagne, along with Captain Warren Shure. We represent the appellate, cross appellee in this case, who I will refer to as the appellant for ease of discussion. Where a general verdict rests in part on conduct that is constitutionally protected.
Let me ask a question. I get this backwards. Should you be going first? Is this certified?
Your Honor, the error is certified.
So
I do believe he goes first.
Okay. As long as everybody's happy, I'm happy.
Cross certification.
Are you content with your positions?
Yes,
in the order of batting?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because there was a grant that also
started. Okay, yeah. So, thank you very much. Good morning. Thank you. Welcome. You'll be rewarded extra time.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. Where a general verdict is based in part upon conduct that is constitutionally protected, the Due Process Clause requires that conviction be set aside. It's actually very straightforward, very limited and narrow issue that was discussed in and set precedent by this honorable court in U.S. v. Barbera, citing Stromberg. In the facts of this case...
Why is this a constitutional rather than a legal sufficiency case?
It's a constitutional case because rather than pursuing Clause 1 and Clause 2, as the government could have done, they essentially brought the CPPA definitions and instructions into this case, which then made it a constitutional issue, which is exactly what happened in Barbera. It was also charged under Clause 1 and Clause 2, which could have rendered it a non-constitutional issue.
How can it be constitutional to charge someone under 134, 1 and 2, but unconstitutional to charge them for the same picture under 134, 3?
Your Honor, the reason for that is in the military environment, as the court knows, and obviously the case law, this is, it's not unsettled, but it's developing. In the military environment, there are different rules and restrictions that apply to personnel that are not necessarily raised by the CPPA. And it was a charging decision in this case to bring that in. Along with that comes the rules that we see in Ashcroft and the related decisions.
But are you relying on fair notice constitutional or First Amendment constitutional?
First Amendment, Your Honor.
Okay, but if it's First Amendment protected, why isn't it first protected? There's something, some military aspect to it?
Your Honor, there could have been, and I believe that the road ahead for practitioners and for the court would be to make a distinction on that basis. Had the trial counsel and people at the trial level avoided the definitions from the CPPA and the instructions verbatim from that, we may not be having this discussion.
And can you clarify why these are constitutionally protected pictures?
Your Honor, they are constitutionally protected, again, because outside of the military environment, the First Amendment is invoked to the extent that they are images, conduct, pictures, writings, are constitutionally protected generally, because they represent free speech. And that's, whether it's distasteful or abhorrent, as this court previously discussed in Barbera, is another question, which you will actually be able to resolve to the extent that the circumstances.
Well, do we really need to reach the constitutional issue when I think the government's trying to get us to make a factual sufficiency determination. But in any event, the question, you know, if the stuff doesn't even meet the statutory definition, you know, you got to have an exhibition of the genitalia and it's got to be lascivious. If, as the CCA said, it doesn't even meet the statutory definition, then why do we need to reach any constitutional issue?
I would suggest that the reason the constitutional issue becomes relevant is because of the general verdict rule not involving constitutional issues, which generally means that if there's a sufficient basis not involving a constitutional issue...
You're right, then it's okay.
So it's really going to be a two-step process. You're going to deal with the certified issue, review the images, decide if they meet the definitions given to the panel, and then at that point, you would analyze under constitutional grounds, and that's what I believe Barbera... It makes it It's directly on
appeal. Counsel, in speaking about Barberi, do you think that it's a per se rule that if there's, let's change the facts from this case and say that instead of a decision by the CCA that three of 22 photographs should not have been included, right, in the matter upon which the conviction rested. Let's say instead it's there was 1,000 photographs that were purportedly child pornography, and the CCA found that one of those photos was not, in fact, properly classified as child pornography, and in their view was constitutionally protected. In your view, would the conviction, the entire conviction, have to be overturned in that case?
I acknowledge that it sounds like an excessive.
So when what are the words when evidence can be deemed unimportant mean?
It depends on the evidence, and Your Honor, this what we're talking about here is the nature of the issue, which is that because we don't know what the panel relied upon or did not rely upon, we can't analyze it like we would, for example, in an improperly admitted statement of the accused. If there was a statement of the accused admitted, constitutionally an error, but we have videotape of the accused committing the offense, it's very easy to analyze that and determine whether that contributed, or to put it in the terms of the Barberi decision, whether it was harmless beyond reasonable doubt. And so that the problem is that in a lot of scenarios with a constitutional issue, we can analyze it separately from the evidence. When we roll up the evidence into a general verdict, it cannot be done, and that's why it is a very unique, limited situation here, because we can't know what the panel did.
Do we even have to make a harmlessness analysis in your determination under Barberi?
Your Honor, I believe that has to be addressed to the extent that it was addressed in Barberi. I do not believe that the analysis undertaken by the Air Force Court was appropriate, because that Air Force Court's opinion, which relied on Harrington versus California, really applies to the other types of constitutional issues like the one we just raised as an example, where you can analyze that separately. Instructions or another, we can analyze an instruction and determine whether it fairly covered the subject matter. When we can't get into the minds of the panel, we have nothing on the record.
Here we look to see whether or not the evidence would be unimportant in regard to everything else that was admitted. And so, for instance, in this case, we have three images that are relatively innocuous compared to the 19 images that are more egregious, certainly. So how would a reasonable panel looking at that, how would the three relatively lesser images affect their determination, given the fact that they're looking at all these egregious images?
I think that the end result is the same. Again, talking about a general verdict under these facts, because we don't have any other factors to determine what the panel did. And it cannot be said that it didn't contribute in the sense that it's not part of the verdict, as opposed to a piece of evidence which may have contributed.
But did it influence it, is the question.
Yes, Your Honor. And that could be something for the court to address to the extent that influence is different than contribute. Yeah. The way we're reading contribute is you have to say beyond reasonable doubt that it wasn't a portion of the verdict.
So do you think that it's a structural? I'm a little confused because it seems on the one hand you're suggesting that it would have to be structural error, that if there was 999 photos but only one that was not good, that we could not affirm the conviction under any circumstances.
In this limited fact pattern, Your Honor, that is correct.
So it's structural error.
We are arguing in line with U.S. v. Barberi that it's constitutional error. But to the extent that structural error helps frame what you're arguing, yes.
If it can't be fixed, right? If it can't be fixed, and if it doesn't matter what the disparity is, then how is that not structural?
We would agree with that.
But was it structural error in Barberi?
It was not, Your Honor. It wasn't discussed in that context. The court did a harmless error analysis. And during that analysis, it didn't really get into the facts of the case, which I think is telling, because Barberi was equal to or worse than the facts of this case. So if that was the kind of thing that was to consider, it seems that it wouldn't have been considered during that case.
But in that case, the disparity, as I recall, was weighted very heavily in the other direction, wasn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor. It was 4 out of 6. And this case, If you were to find, let's say, I don't know if there's a huge difference between 1 and 3 in this case, 1 out of 22 or 3 out of 22, but it's certainly closer to 4 out of 6 than it is to 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of 10,000.
Well, I was using an extreme example to see how far you could go, Counselor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, Counselor, in regard to the three photos at issue, is the issue whether the pubic area of the minor was shown in that image a factual sufficiency question, a legal sufficiency issue, mixed question? What is that?
It's a mixed question, in our opinion. It's factual sufficiency to the extent that it met the definitions, but also legal sufficiency because in order to determine that, we have to compare it to the instructions given to the panel.
And what standard of review should we then be using?
Based on the fact that it was a certified issue to this court, we believe that you were permitted and should use the de novo standard to assess those three images.
So we use a de novo standard to determine whether the pubic area is in fact depicted in some manner?
Yes, Your Honor. And if so, whether it satisfies the...
Well, but the question of whether it's shown is a question of fact, isn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And you got to get past showing it to get to lasciviousness.
Absolutely.
Okay, well.
Sorry if I misspoke.
Yeah, it's a question of fact, is it not?
Absolutely.
Lasciviousness may be a mixed question of fact and law, but you don't even get there if it's not shown.
That is correct.
Okay.
The government is arguing that the pictures, in fact, depict the pubic area. And so is that a question? I mean, I presented it as in fact. Is that a question of fact or law?
That is a question of fact, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Is that within the purview of review of this court or not?
Had the Judge Advocate General not certified that in this court, I believe you would have had to analyze it under the terms of the analysis done by the Air Force Court. But because they certified it, I believe it is within the purview.
Under what standard of review?
Once again, Your Honor, I believe this standard is less favorable to the appellant than some others, but I do believe it's the court.
And not clearly erroneous is a finding of fact?
I would defer to the court on
okay.
that. I believe that it is.
I don't want to get into a jurisdictional discussion with you, but do you understand the difference between us being able to take an issue and us having jurisdiction to decide a particular type of issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, because we have to take it because they certified it, but that doesn't expand our jurisdiction into fact-finding.
In theory, we do questions of law, and we review certain facts under a clearly erroneous standard, and the question here is whether this is that type of fact that can be reviewed for clear, like a military judge's findings of fact, we would review for clearly erroneous, under a clearly erroneous standard, and the question I'm asking, and now more directly asking, I want to see how you would deal with it, but the real question is the CCA's conclusion, trying to remove the determinative language, conclusion that the pictures in question did not depict the pubic area, is that subject to clearly erroneous review, or is that not subject to review at all, is the core question?
Your Honor, I'm glad that the questions proceeded along this line because when we separated, did it depict the pubic area from the legal analysis required by the DOS factors, I believe that we could actually say that the first factual issue could be analyzed under clearly erroneous, and then the legal issue, which this court would obviously have full reign to consider, could be reviewed under the de novo standard. And so I'm glad that we separated that out. Just thinking through that way, I can see a scenario where we have two different standards. But under either standard, I think that those three images are not going to satisfy. And the Air Force Court, it's not binding on this court necessarily, but the fact that the Air Force Court could have found those to that definition and avoided potentially a lot of issues with the decision, it's an indication of what you either have seen or will see. Turning back to the argument the Harrington issue, again, as we discussed, the government, that's where they got off track, and we don't believe that it can be extracted, it being the constitutional issue from the non-constitutional issue. That is why Barbaria is on all fours, to the extent that you find the images meet the definition. With that, I see my time is nearly up.
You get bonus time if you want it because of the chattering at the beginning.
Your Honor, like
by one of the judges up here.
I would like to take the opportunity to answer any questions on my argument to this point prior to the sitting.
You will have additional time on rebuttal. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Chief Judge Baker, judges of the court. May it please the court. I'm Captain Thomas Alford, along with Lieutenant Colonel Catherine Oller, who represent the United States in this case. Images 8308, 8313, and 0870 all meet the legal definition of child pornography, since all three images contain visual depictions of an actual minor, KLR, engaged in sexually explicit conduct.
Just to be clear, in your view, you are bound by the case is bound by the military judge's definition in this case. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So when you say it meets the definition, it meets the definition as provided by the military judge.
Exactly.
Okay. What are you asking us to do here? What is the Judge Advocate General asking us to do in this certified question?
With respect to the three images, Your Honor, if you look at the findings of the CCA, specifically highlighted on the Joint Appendix pages 11 and 12, they found, based on the military judge's instructions to the members, the question we must address is whether, as a matter of law, the images in this case contain the lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area. They said it again on page 12 and again on page 12.
You make the point in your brief if I read your brief right, you made the point that it really shows the pubic area and therefore they screwed up. They, the CCA, screwed up.
That's correct.
That's a pure question of fact. Isn't that binding on us? What do we do with it? We're not in the business of answering. In fact, we really don't have the jurisdiction to answer a pure question of fact. They decided it that way. I think what CJAG's asking us to do is get into factual sufficiency here, because if you don't get into factual sufficiency, you never get to lasciviousness. And you're trying to get around by barbarity by saying, no, they really were child pornography. But if we don't get factual sufficiency, we don't get to lasciviousness, they don't come in, and you don't get around barbarity. So where does that leave us and you?
I think part of the problem here, Your Honor, is that the CCA, when they made the legal sufficiency finding later on in the opinion, I think they mentioned at one time, now assuming these images aren't legally and factually sufficient. But really what they did was they applied the wrong standard to the images. They applied the wrong standard of what constitutes child pornography, what constitutes sexually explicit conduct. So that's how you have jurisdiction as a matter of law.
They applied, what was the standard they applied?
It appears that it didn't apply the standard with regard to that it could be the genitals, exposure of the genitals, or the pubic area, because the pubic area is clearly in all three images. It's there.
I'd say that is questionable. But anyway, whether it is or not, that's a question of fact.
Well, let's say it is. Okay, let's say 40 doctors come in and say, there it is. And here we are. Is that subject to review, the CCA's conclusion that that part of the body was not depicted? Is that subject to review by this court at this time? If so, under what standard?
If the CCA went then and shifted gears into a factual sufficiency review, if they looked at the images and said, you know what, we're not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that this is somebody who's under the age of 18.
Well, don't they have to? They use the CPPA definition. They've got to do that. They've got to find, number one, that there's an exhibition of the genitalia, and number two, that it's lascivious. I mean, you're saying, well, they changed course. No. They've got to do that because that's what the definition requires, and that's the way the members were instructed.
This is where the issue gets a bit clouded, Your Honor, because the military judge...
You got that right.
The military judge at the trial level made a legal finding. He, consistent with U.S. v. Rawl and consistent with U.S. v. Puckett, which is that AFCA decision cited in our brief, he took the images back and he said, and he, there's actually a quote in the record where he said, I'm not going to just hand a bunch of images off to the members, which is the fear and barbarity, and a bunch of images off to the members and hope they get it right. He separated out what was 404B and what constituted just that modicum of the standard to get past legal sufficiency that was enough to go to the fact finder. So it's a bit of a mixed question, but the problem then on appeal is any time if the CCA applies the wrong definition and they don't consider that the pubic area could have been there, then the rest of their analysis that flows from that could be incorrect.
Well, now, but you're still pressing me back to factual sufficiency. You can't get around the fact that the definition requires an exhibition of the genitalia, and whether a picture includes an exhibition of the genitalia sounds to me like a pure question of fact. Lasciviousness is probably a mixed question of fact and law, but you gotta get around that, and I think you're still asking us to do factual sufficiency.
Can I ask you my question? One is, if we were reviewing whether a rational trier of fact could find all the elements of the offense, what standard would we apply to that?
Your Honor, that's a legal sufficiency standard.
We'd apply the Jackson or whatever that thing is, Jackson-Turner?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
If the question is pure question of fact, not this case, the CCA... the question is, did the robbery occur, for some reason it's relevant to the elements of the offense is the robbery has to occur on a Sunday. And the CCA finds that it occurred on a Sunday, or it didn't occur on a Sunday, and the record is clear as day that it occurred on a Sunday. The crime is committed and they have the newspaper and the clock and everything is there. That's a question of fact. Is that correct?
I think that would be a good
okay.
Question.
And is that subject to review by this court? And if so, under what standard?
Your Honor, I think, I know there has been a case where this court reviews whether or not the actual proper factual sufficiency standard was applied properly by the CCA. But that's not what we're arguing here. If this is a factual sufficiency issue, and this court views it as a factual sufficiency issue, we would agree that the analysis then goes to whether or not there was prejudice. But if this was an incorrect application of the legal standard, which is why we TJAC asserted this issue, unlike what they did in Barbary, where the Army conceded that those images actually were, did not fit into the legal definition. In this case, we're trying to say, no, that actually the pubic area is there. Maybe the court isn't convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that that's lascivious, but that would be a factual question that you couldn't review.
So if the question was, is this a pubic area, because we're not sure what the pubic area is, that's a question of law or a mixed question of law or fact. If the question is, were they wearing a red hat or a blue hat, that's a question of fact. And even if we see a red hat and the CCA says it's a blue hat, that's beyond our review.
That's correct, Your
even
Honor.
Even under a clearly erroneous standard.
That's correct, Your Honor. And it's a small distinction. And if I could quote U.S. v. Rawl, it says, the meaning of lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area is an issue of law. Whether the materials depict a lascivious exhibition is a question of fact. So, and in our subsite, we quoted United States versus Knox, which was that Third Circuit opinion that was also cited in Roderick. And that's the nudity or the discernibility of the pubic region or genitals are not prerequisites for the occurrence of an exhibition within the CPPA, which is the legal issue that we believe the CCA erred in saying that the pubic area can't qualify in that particular case.
Counsel, I'm a little confused. It seems to me that I just heard you say that the CCA's factual determination that these three images did not contain images of the pubic area or genitals, that we cannot review that. That was a factual determination that they made, and we cannot review that even under a clearly erroneous standard. But it seems to me that in your certified issue and your briefs, you're asking us to do that.
And again, this is where it's a fine line, but I would agree with you, yes, if it is a factual determination, but the problem is that they did not find that that was a factual determination. They said as a matter of law, these could, under any circumstance, any reasonable fact finder could never find that these are lascivious, I'm sorry, that these depicted the pubic area.
Well, if any reasonable fact finder cannot find it, isn't that a factual finding? I mean, if we take a look at these images and we make a determination one way or the other, that's a factual determination. Whether it discloses those areas or not.
For something, is or is not a genital area is factual, right? But lascivious, you apply the DOS factors and it's a legal analysis, isn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes.
So it's a two-step process. So we're not talking about lascivious here, we're talking about whether the images disclose these areas.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I would liken it to like a 917 motion where the military judge can say, you didn't even get over your initial threshold here. And that seems to be what the CCA is. You can't even get over that initial threshold. Now, had they come back and said, we just, as a matter of fact, we don't think it's there, that would have been different, and this court couldn't review it, and I would agree with you, Your Honor.
Can I get you to talk about something different?
Yes, Your Honor.
For a minute. With respect to Barberi, is the government fighting so hard on the issue of these photographs because it agrees with the appellant's counsel that under Barberi we have no option but to affirm the CCA's decision? In other words, that we have no option but to reverse the CCA's decision. I mean, Barberi had its particular facts in the holding in that case, but it didn't suggest that it was structural error, did it? Didn't it use the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard?
That's correct, Your Honor. We would assert that Barberi does stand for the proposition that in Barberi, I believe, cites Hedgepeth against Pulido. And in that particular case, the Supreme Court came and said, just like if you omit an element, if you don't give a proper instruction, that those can still be reviewed for harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt. So even if this was error for the military judge to allow in, despite doing that preliminary review, the error is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And I'll get into exactly those particular factors.
Do you think that the number disparity makes a difference? Do you understand the question? In Barberi, we had a rate. Four were left in, four were kicked out and two were left. And here there was 22, of which 19 remained.
I think it is one factor in the analysis, and not to slam the CCA too much, but that we would ask that this court actually adopt that standard and they adopt the prejudice because they look at the quantity, the quality, and then the circumstances surrounding the crimes. We would ask that, but the number is one part of the calculation, but it's not the end-all be-all because in Barberi, there were still two that were sufficient, but that wasn't enough. So in this particular case, you have 19 images that any reasonable fact finder, if you look at those images, could constitute depictions of children engaged in sexually explicit conduct. Now that, in addition to the fact that appellant in this case actually confessed, and the important part is he didn't just confess. Appellant, he acknowledged receiving photos of an explicit nature. That's the joint appendix at 162 to 170. That's where his written confession is. He acknowledges that at the time he was requesting the images, he was engaged in sexually explicit conduct. And then if I could quote appellant, and this is what actually links, so you can find that it's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because you know that the members did not make their finding, rest their finding on those questioned images. They made their finding on the images that he actually confessed to in the egregious images. He says, quote, in my Gmail account, you will find 10 to 15 images of a 15-year-old young woman naked or showing her private areas, and another 10 to 15 images of her in underwear or bikinis, which was ultimately submitted for 404B purposes. He also goes on to say, my wife was looking at some pictures of KLR naked, topless in a bikini, and one showing an up-close shot of a vagina with a hairbrush sticking out of it. And that matches up exactly with image 1025. So the idea that the members could rest their verdict, unlike in Barberi, where there were 66% of the images that they could have possibly rested their verdict on, in this case, there's 19 images, and then appellant himself says what images he himself knew were child pornography and that he was worried about.
Wait, is the appellant's determination of what constitutes child pornography binding on anybody?
It's not, Your Honor, but it shows that...
It's purely up to him as to whether he wants to say, you can go look at, there's bad stuff on my computer. But it's not up to the appellant to say, there's child pornography on my computer. He doesn't know whether it's child pornography. That's a question of law.
The main point, though, Your Honor, is that this is basically a confession case, and the corroborating evidence is the images. So the fact that he received and he possessed images is indicated in his confession. He admitted to it. So the fact that...
Well, if it's a confession case and it's corroboration, the standard for corroboration is pretty low, then why is the government so all-fired, eager to get these three things in?
I think the issue, Your Honor, is the holding from U.S. v. Barbary and the concern about the law of the case that you couldn't even reach looking at whether those images constituted it. So,
well, are you asking us to overrule Barbary? I don't think you said that.
No, Your Honor. No.
Okay.
We would ask that it be limited strictly to those particular facts of that case. And then in this case and in future cases where there may be one image out of 1,000 accidentally allowed in by the fact finder, I'm sorry, by the military judge, that can still be reviewed for harmlessness. So the confession goes to the quality of the evidence. Again, the numbers, the sheer numbers of the images goes to the quantity. Also, I would point out that there are 10 separate emails. Six of those emails that were exchanged back and forth contemporaneous with inappropriate discussions with this young lady were also... that those six emails had CP in them, and only two of the emails contained possibly legally insufficient images, and none of the emails contained only legally insufficient evidence. That is to say that of the three contested images here, no email contained just images that the CCA later found were legally sufficient. And then as a final point, I just point out the circumstances surrounding the offense, that he actively formed a relationship with then a 14-year-old girl who was engaged in sexually explicit chats, which are reflected in Joint Appendix page 123 through 161. And he actively invited images depicting a lascivious display of her genitals and pubic area with full knowledge of her age. So when you're viewing this case under a prejudice analysis, if indeed that's how you look at it, you can be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that the fact finder made the proper call and the arrest of their verdict on a proper basis. The three images at issue in this case were, as a matter of law, visual depictions of KLR, an actual minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct. AFCA erred finding otherwise, but if this court disagrees and finds that any of these images were legally insufficient to constitute child pornography, then any error admitting them is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government has repeatedly stated in the briefs and during argument, I'm not sure that it's all that relevant, but I do want to point it out that the judge did a thorough review and admitted certain pictures. I could be wrong. I read this record several times. I'm sure you have as well. I don't see anything in the record that reflects the judge determining these images were legally sufficient to go to the panel. What I do see, and what I'm going to point to, I apologize for the expansive citation, but proving a negative is a little difficult. There's a long colloquy between record pages 264 to record pages 297, and that's where the quotes that the government has discussed come from. And what it appears, what happened, according to the record, is that the military judge said, hey, trial counsel, you're not going to just give all these pictures to the panel. And essentially, you, trial counsel, can identify whether to consider. There may be something different in the record, but I don't believe it's there. And so to the extent that that's relevant to your decision, I don't believe the judge actually did an independent review other than allowing trial counsel to identify which images trial counsel wanted to admit.
In this case, did the government put on proof and prove the element of services credit or not? I can't remember. Is this Article 134.3? Did they prove up the element of discredit?
It was part of the instruction. He was charged as one and two, and then the CPA definitions were included, similar to Barbary, and then...
So that means that if this were constitutionally protected, it'd be constitutionally protected in a military context as well, is that correct?
No, Your Honor. I believe that if so, it omitted the CPPA instructions, and I wouldn't propose the alternate instructions they would use, but if they were to jump to the service discrediting angle and avoid bringing in all the law and background associated with CPPA, it may not have been constitutionally protected in the military environment.
But if it's service discrediting in this context, because you're not contesting that element.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So if you took away the CPPA definition and all you're left with then is service discrediting, why would it be constitutionally protected here and not there?
Because if you view it the opposite way, it's constitutionally protected under the definitions of the CPPA.
So that's, you're saying anything that meets the definition of, anything that doesn't meet the definition of the CPPA is constitutionally protected?
No, Your Honor, and I apologize if my answer was not. What I'm saying is that this problem can be easily avoided by avoiding what happened in this case. And once you take the elements and the instructions directly from the CPPA, you necessarily include the constitutional issue. Whereas if that were omitted in this case or in future cases in the charging decision, you can avoid the constitutional issue.
Well, unless insofar as ultimately we may have to decide what in the military context is service protected, is constitutionally protected, regardless of service discrediting conduct.
That is correct, Your Honor.
You know, but that's an issue for another day down the road. And you know, one of the problems with this case, I think both sides would admit, is they dragged in the CPPA definition and we're stuck with it.
I would agree, Your Honor, and to the extent, I believe that answer also stems any concerns about floodgates, and really it's a very limited issue that counsel and practitioners can avoid, and I think the current case law suggests they should avoid by just staying away from that altogether. Unfortunately for the government, in this case, that's what was done, and I believe that Barbary is binding. Are there any other questions that I can address?
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel, and we will stand in recess until next week at Camp Lejeune. Thank you very much.
The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.